Hello, listeners, and welcome to another footnote episode of the Fantasy Animation Podcast. I'm Alex Sargent.
And I'm Chris Holliday.
And Chris, Jared has hung back from the Flintstones episode. Jared, thanks for staying with us. We're going to talk about Hanna-Barbera for 10 minutes, which is going to be difficult for you, I imagine. There's a lot to say, but I guess I'm going to get my timer ready. Just give us the gist of... I guess let's start right at the basics. If people have only vaguely heard of it or indeed never heard of it, what is Hanna-Barbera? When does it start and why is it important for kind of the history of animation? There you go.
So Hanna-Barbera is a studio formed by two legendary animators who came over from MGM and have seven Oscars from their Tom and Jerry series. And then MGM said to them, oh, us reissuing your cartoons makes enough money, so we don't need you to create new cartoons for us anymore. And they're like, where do we do, what do we go now? Because there really isn't a place for us in theatrical animation. Oh, there's this new medium. Let's go to television. They had animated a few opening themes, like for I Love Lucy. And so they first created Rough and Ready the show was actually just a wraparound content starting in 1957 around some Columbia cartoon shorts. And then their first kind of real show was in 1958, which is Huckleberry Hound, which is another memorable character. And then they just went full force into television animation, became the most prolific television animators in the history of television, creating over 160 shows, thousands of episodes, and iconic characters, including Yogi Bear, including Flintstones, Jetsons, Scooby-Doo, and a number of other favorites as well. And every time someone talks to me, they're willing to shout their favorite. It's never telling me. They shout their favorite at me. And so there's a long list of characters that they're credited in creating.
Is there anything that binds all of these well-known characters together? Is there a particular style? Is there a particular approach, a tone, something that they're known for that makes a Hanna-Barbera cartoon something special or unique as a product in and of itself?
One is their famous use of limited animation, that the backgrounds remain fairly static. Yep. The movements are limited, especially... with kind of their bodies versus their heads, that one of their famous kind of aspects of their characters is they all wear neckties because they separate the head, which moves a little more than the rest of their body. Also just their very kind of clever use of wordplay, their kind of basic almost vaudevillian comedy that follows through. They're also mimicking of famous voices, that Yogi Bear is Art Carney. We know Fred Flintstone is Jackie Gleason. And so with much of their content, it's a reflection of when it was produced, who was famous and who was familiar. And so many of their shows are not reinventing the wheel. They're just figuring out ways to bring in new characters, especially after kind of that Flintstones, Jetson era animal characters that reflect kind of those famous themes and famous tropes brought in by whether it's a giant Great Dane or a talking bear to bring that comedic element to first primetime television, and eventually they became very associated with Saturday morning television in the United States.
Yeah. With regards to limited animation, is this an economic or an aesthetic issue? Because obviously with the way that you describe the characters and obviously the relationship that then has with television, being able to produce content quickly and so we've touched on limited animation in other places, but in terms of that limited in a positive way, is it an aesthetic demand or element, or is it driven entirely by economics?
It's driven both by economics and time. That
right.
The much quicker turnaround for a 22-minute episode than they faced with Tom and Jerry, 7-minute shorts. And then they were getting a fraction per minute in terms of the animation, that Tom and Jerry would cost about $50,000. a Flintstones episode, they started at around 65,000. And so per minute, I don't want to get the calculator out, but it's much less. And so by having those static backgrounds, limited the movement, reusing cells as well. And you see kind of the same cells. And Disney would do similar things to save money on certain scenes, but not nearly at the rate that Hanna-Barbera would utilize that. But that led them to produce more. And why they dominated so much of children's television of the era is because of their quick output and their large output in terms of the amount of characters and the amount of episodes they're able to put out.
How quick are we talking here? Are we talking a couple of weeks an episode, a week an episode? What's the turnaround they're having to work to?
It depends on kind of, I mean, the episode itself, but it was still a couple of months, but they're able to work on multiple episodes at the same time. And so that was the significance. I mean, this is not the South Park turnaround of a week. And The Simpsons are kind of in the same era or same kind of timeline, but it still took a few months to animate it, but it was quicker to write it. And then they were able to kind of produce multiple ones at the same time to make sure they had a full season of episodes for all their 6 seasons.
I don't have the timer, but I feel like this is a question, and the bit about scholarship is, has it been difficult given that your work is on Hanna-Barbera and knowing what I sort of vaguely know about how it's not, they're not really discussed that much as a studio. Is it kind of a challenge to write about and find the material? And as part of that, where did you go to in terms of scholarship that might be digging into Hanna-Barbera, perhaps as a studio that isn't talked about as much as other kind of big animation production houses?
So it wasn't actually that hard. That Hanna-Barbera, unlike Disney, is not nearly as secretive. They're also coming up at a time where there was an intense interest in television. And so a lot of kind of what I found for the book, it was a combination. I mean, you have kind of the academic influence and the whether it's Barrier or Wells or these other incredible academics, but also you have a lot of archived newspaper and magazine articles that have interviews. You also have incredible biographies from most of the animators as well that created these shows. And so, and especially the Hanna-Barbera biographies, they do an incredible job of talking through the production, talking through the meetings that they had with the various networks and the various sponsors. And so it was actually. That was my concern starting out, and it was actually easier. So that also made it kind of amazed me more that they hadn't been written about because their production histories were fairly available and they're fairly open about their decisions they made around their programs and characters.
It seems absurd that they weren't written about. Like, this is a popular, what's the right word? Cartoon stable. We all know the characters. They're all beloved. They seem to have a similar cultural status to some of the stuff that is really written about. And yet just has slipped through the cracks quite a lot. Do you have any theories or postulations as to why that is?
I mean, some of it is kind of animation studies is still playing a lot of catch up. I mean, we have media studies, and television studies, but embracing especially television animation studies, and this is where kind of some of the block comes along as well, that when it, as animation studies started kind of gaining ground in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, everyone is obsessed with Disney. And so the imbalance of that focus, along with kind of animation studies falling behind, but also just people look down on what Hanna-Barbera was doing. And so it's also kind of this elitism that people don't want to embrace. And my kind of approach is I'm not concerned with kind of impressing people kind of with my artistic knowledge. I'm there to understand the impact a television show or another piece of content has on larger society. And again, every time I mention Hanna-Barbera, people are screaming their favorite show at me. So there's clear that emotional attention. But people are so obsessed with the behemoth that is Disney, people were kind of ignoring. And it's Warner Brothers have fallen in that similar trap as well, that I don't think there's nearly enough engagement with Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies. And then there's later post-World War II characters like Wile E. Coyote and Speedy Gonzales. And so I think there's a lot of catch-up to be made. But unfortunately, we've also missed those opportunities to talk to the producers that were alive through the 90s to get more of that critical perspective on their content.
And you've done that with 10 seconds remaining.
Look at that.
So that was very impressive.
Spot on.
Yeah, well, okay, great. I think more needs to be done on this, obviously, and scholars out there need to get on it. But as a nice start, Jared's book, Hanna-Barbera: A History, is available in all good bookshops. So I'll certainly be reefing through the coffee I got prior to this recording and making sure that I'm immersing myself in this really important stable. So it was really a pleasure to talk to you again, Jared. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
I had a great time. Thank you so much for your time and opportunity.
Suggestions for future footnotes can be emailed at fananimresearch, fananimresearch@gmail.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Bye.